Welcome to Confessions of a CEO, powered by RG. My name is Carl Swansbury, and I'm delighted today to have Andy Leslie on my podcast. For those of you who don't know Andy, Andy has been a MD and CEO in a variety of businesses over a prolonged period of time, before more recently, and in fact just before COVID, deciding to actually hang up his full-time MD boots to pursue a plural career of becoming a non-exec director, an advisor to a variety of high-growth, predominantly privately owned businesses. Andy has made a transition toward NED from full-time MD that many look to try and achieve, which is exactly why I'm delighted to have Andy on my podcast today to not only find out a little bit more about why he's decided to become an NED, but actually the challenges he's had to overcome to become a successful non-exec director and someone whom is respected and indeed perceived as being able to add demonstrable value to the board that he sits on. I'm also looking to find out a little bit more about Andy's upbringing and, of course, the decisions he's had to make to become the successful businessman and father of four he has become today. I genuinely think that it's going to be a fascinating podcast, so thank you for joining me. Andy, welcome to this Confessions of a NED / CEO podcast.
Sure.
Absolutely delighted to have you with me today.
I'm delighted to be here, Carl. Thanks very much for the invitation. Looking forward to it.
Well, you've not yet seen the questions I have in store for you, Andy. So be careful. Be careful what you wish for. So in terms of kicking the conversation off, given you have had such a varied, such an extensive career so far, I think it would be great, Andy, if we could just perhaps go back to your last full-time CEO role.
Okay.
Just to understand a little bit about what that role entailed and fundamentally what the catalyst was contemplate life beyond being a full-time CEO.
My official title of CEO, I guess, would be Shopbox would be the most recent, which was a startup business. So it's very easy to be CEO of a startup is the first thing I would say. I was the only paid employee with a number of shareholders. Startup business, well-funded, famously went on Dragon's Den as a very last resort to try and raise some funding. It was great. I enjoyed it. It wasn't your typical CEO role. I guess if I can link that to an MD role that I did, which didn't have a CEO in the business, was Sun Magic Juices, which we took from £8 million turnover roughly in 3.5 years to about £52 million. Through, growth and acquisition, organic growth and acquisition, managing a couple of hundred people, and playing to my strengths, which I think are the sales and marketing function, but in the MD role and running three factories and all the rest of that entails and driving around the country like a madman. And I think actually the reason I mention that, and you laugh, but the reason I mention that is that's probably one of the straws that broke the camel's back. Having spent 20, 25 years doing 50,000 miles a year in a variety of jobs that I had, that year I did 60,000 miles. My factories were in Kent, South Wales, and Lancashire, and I'm living in Shropshire. So, you can imagine each week I'd be at a different factory, very rarely at home. Got to that position where actually it wasn't about the money anymore. I was, you've paid your mortgage off, you've got some money in the bank, you've got your pension banked up. You kind of feel a bit more comfortable with yourself. That I started to think about there must be a different way to run my life than this. Although we'd had a great degree of success, so I left that business when it was on a high. We'd taken it from 8 million to 52.
And were you an equity holder in that business?
I was a very small equity holder in that business.
And when you stepped away as MD, Andy, what did that mean?
The equity was given up. I mean, the equity was given up.
Oh, so you just passed that back.
Returned back, yeah.
And just talk me through how it was so easy to make that decision, given you were passing value back, value you'd created.
Yeah, I think it depends where you decide the value is in what you're doing in your way of life. And sometimes that's about money, and I get it completely. For a long time in my career, money's the driving force, or not necessarily money, but success and what comes with success in however you choose to measure success. And money's one part of that. Money became less important as the driving force, if that makes sense. And I know it's probably rare that you get people sitting here saying it wasn't, but you get to a point where it's not the driving force anymore. It's not as important as other aspects of life and trying to have some balance back in life a bit.
So just to really understand, he's obviously, you were MD, running a big business,
biggest
site, and you were an equity holder. Obviously, it wouldn't have been one thing in isolation that ultimately resulted in you resigning as MD.
Yeah.
So outside of not feeling the need to have
the personal aspect,
the extent that you had that need previously, what else went to your decision to ultimately resign as MD?
I think also, well, it was mostly that, but I think partly that I knew I had something else available that wasn't moving into the area we're going to talk about most, which is, you know, being plural and doing some other different things. It was another permanent job, but it was back in sales and marketing. It had an equity stake involved in it, and it took me back to a business that I could see potential in, which was the Hancock's Innovative Bites business. So there was something that drew me out as well from and you know, it was sensibly salaried, it was all those good things with bonus schemes and all the rest of it. So it was a way of simplifying a bit. It was maybe a step on the journey rather than reaching the end straight away. So rather than stepping straight out of being MD into let's go plural, it was, well, here's a gentle move, and then actually there's logically a gentle move beyond that that then takes me to where I want to be. I also still had kids in school at that point. You know, I've got four kids, they're all privately educated. While that's going on, it's a different decision to once that's finished.
Of course it is. And obviously, this question is very personal to everyone, but I'd love your perspective, Andy.
Sure.
So you said that, you know, once you become financially independent, no longer do you have a need to earn to the extent you did have previously. In your mind, how were you able to prescriptively quantify what financial independence means? Because, you know, for one person, it could mean £50,000 of cash in an ISA.
Mm-hmm.
To somebody else, it could mean $100 million in stocks and shares, diversified. So what is financial independence?
And there are people with billions who still aren't satisfied.
That's right.
Money.
So how did you quantify
I have tried to live to a doctrine of working to live rather than living to work. I really have. And sometimes I've probably not followed that mantra, and work's become too much in terms of the balance of life.
Mm.
And I think we all probably do this to an extent. And the further you get into your career, the more you think about, so what do I actually need here? What do I need here? Am I going to move house again? Like I said, there's education to think about. There's other costs, there's holidays. You know, what do I actually need here to live a life that I'll really enjoy? I still do things that I really enjoy from a work point of view, but maybe not have to do the things that I don't enjoy or I've grown to not enjoy as much as I did when I was younger.
Yes.
And I think it's for anybody, it's a personal decision. For anyone, it's a personal calculation. I mean, there are people who drop out with nothing and go and live in the woods or go and, you know, and I can probably understand that too.
Yes.
That way inclined. I think for me, it was just a simple case of, I'm not saying I don't need to earn any money. I'm saying I don't need to earn what I needed, what I earned.
Yes.
In the peak of my career. And so I'm able to be flexible. And I think that's an important word. Flexible, adaptable. Work with people I enjoy working with is a good thing.
Oh.
If I don't enjoy working with somebody, I don't need to. And maybe everybody feels like that. I don't know. But I don't know. I think you just reach a point where it suddenly becomes a thing in your head.
Yes.
Actually, you know what? I want to do something different.
And without putting a number on it, Andy, mm-hmm. because for sure it's very personal to you and each person. But did you actually prepare a calculation which said, if I have X, I can financially continue to live the lifestyle I want to and support my wife and children? Did you run a calculation?
Yeah, I did. I mean, you know, if you ask my wife, she'd probably say I could have put a bit more into the calculation.
That's right.
But, all my kids, for that matter. But I did. I mean, I did run a calculation, and I kind of worked out that, you know, we can have this lifestyle. I'm not saying we have a decent lifestyle. My daughter rides horses. We have horses at home, bit of land. We have a little stable yard and equestrian facilities. You know, horses are not a cheap hobby.
No.
So that's got to be taken into consideration. I did a calculation based on the lifestyle that we wanted to live from now on, and how much I wanted to be at home rather than away from home, and what I thought would be sensible in terms of remuneration for the value I think I can bring to the companies that I work with.
And I think that methodical approach is something that perhaps everyone would benefit from going through at a particular time in their career.
I think there comes a time.
I think, as you say, Andy, there's always more. You can always create more value.
Yeah.
And the job is never done.
No.
The risk there is you keep pursuing, you keep working hard, but for what?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you had decided that actually if you had financial independence in relative terms,
yeah,
that was the time to start thinking about a different balance.
Yes.
And I think everyone benefit from that exercise, even if they don't act on it.
Absolutely right. And I mean, I'm sure I had done it before and not acted on it. Yeah. You know, you kind of reach points where you think, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to do something else and find another way. And you do go through the exercise, even if you just go through it mentally and think, no, now is not the time. But if I do this, this, then there comes a time when it becomes a more sensible decision.
Yeah. And before we talk about, I guess, when you decided fundamentally to go away from being an executive to become a non-exec director or someone who supports many businesses, so plural, was there ever a time where, because of the demands, because of running ragged around the country, you actually just thought about throwing in the towel on a less structured, less considered basis than the methodical approach you talk about?
Well, I think when I first stepped out of a salaried role, let's call it that, which was around about the time that COVID hit. I don't really want to talk about COVID, so sorry I mentioned it. I wasn't really sure what that was going to look like. So although I did a methodical approach, wasn't particularly sure exactly how it was going to pan out. So what I probably was a bit random. I did some consulting work. I did some strategy work for international brands that wanted to enter the UK market, for UK brands that wanted to penetrate international markets, some strategic work for various companies, mostly in the food sector, which is where an awful lot of my experience is. Whilst I kind of considered, where do I want to be and how do I want this to actually work going forward? And just how many days a week do I want to be working, which is another consideration. And you know, and I've met so many independently wealthy people over the last 20 years, you know, doing what I've been doing in startups and in SMEs, and who tend to, you know, most of them sell a business, make lots of money, and the first thing they do is to start another business. And I'm kind of, don't you want to just go and sit on a beach and have a bit of a break? And that, you know, maybe this won't be a popular view with those independent wealthy people out there. But I think, do you know what my perspective is? That if I were lucky enough to do that, and I haven't done that by any stretch, I would find things to do, but it wouldn't be work. It would be things that I'd just enjoy doing. I'd play more golf. I'd go on more traveling. I'd you know, do things with my kids. And I think the other thing to this, I don't want to bring the conversation down because it's actually a really upbeat and happy conversation, was my brother died, sadly, a few years ago.
Oh, another.
And that kind of, that also brings things home a little bit. I mean, when my parents are both dead, and when your parents die, that's one thing. You kind of start to think, oh, I'm the next generation. When your brother dies, I'm the baby of the family by some margin. But when my brother Gordon died, it really kind of hit home. You know what? I don't want to be one of those people who dies young and regret, you know, before I've done lots of things that I want to do.
And how old was Gordon when he passed? Sorry, Andy.
He was in his 60s, in his early 60s.
Okay. Devastating. I'm so sorry to hear that. I didn't appreciate that. And obviously, whilst that was a devastating time, and you can never prepare yourself for losing anyone you love.
Yeah.
You know, mother, father, brother, anyone else. I mean, is there any good you were able to take from that situation, which has helped you in your life since that point?
Well, I think, as I said, it's the reason I mention it is because it's another one of those things. And all of these things that happen that you think nothing of probably at the time,
yes,
suddenly start to tick away in your brain, and you think, well, actually, you know, I want to make sure. What if I'm one of those people who died young? I want to make sure I've had the time.
You value your time.
I think it makes you value time a bit more. Yeah, you value time a bit more. You want to get some balance. You want to get and you know, you realize that it can't be all about work. It can't be. It's got to be about a mixture of work. And I realize that, you know, I'm very fortunate that I've had a number of roles that have got me to a position where I can make that decision.
Yes.
And there are many people out there who probably never reach that point. And I realize that it's speaking from a relative position of privilege. But I think don't take it for granted. You know, if you've got that available and that option available, I think it's a really worthy thing to think about, and how can I spend my time actually giving something back just to the people around me? And you know, I'm doing a bit of mentoring at a university of business study students. That's an unpaid job. It's fine. It's, and I really enjoy it. I go, yeah, really nice write-up on LinkedIn by one of them who got a job with PwC.
Awesome.
And you know, and he was thrilled because he said without the help on interview practice, on CV writing, he didn't think he'd have got that role. That kind of thing is just, it brings great pleasure. As much pleasure as, you know, generating another 20 million of sales on a top line for someone. It's kind of important stuff to do.
Yes. So obviously, as you say, Andy, you, for a variety of reasons, you reached the conclusion that, you know, being a full-time director, salaried, was no longer what you wanted. You wanted more variety, you wanted a plural existence, and you wanted more time. So just talk me through how you got from being a full-time director to now being sat opposite me. And sitting on many boards as non-exec director and or consultant. How did you actually make that leap?
I think there's, as with any of these things, it's interesting. I was watching your interview with Neil Stevenson a couple of weeks ago and listening very interestedly with what he was saying. And, you know, because you meet people who do something entrepreneurial and with a bit of luck and hit in the right moment. I'm not saying luck, it's hard work as well. You make a success of it. There are 100 entrepreneurs who never make a success of these things. I think actually it's quite similar when you go out on your own and do this kind of work. It is entrepreneurial. It's about trying to find businesses where you genuinely feel you can add value to what they do. Lucky that I had some contacts that I'd worked with before who I knew would need some help with strategy development, that kind of thing. Reached out to them, reached out to quite a few. Was lucky enough to land two or three. My first year freelance went incredibly well, probably earned as much as I did in my last year salary. But it was, you end up back in that situation where you're spending too much time again.
And just to and ask, so it's, how did you allow yourself to end back up in the same predicament?
I think just because you see really interesting things to do. I'm quite action-orientated. I quite like doing stuff. I'm quite animated in the way that I work. And I think it's really easy to get enthusiastic and excited by things. And I do. And I still do. And you know, you jump on these opportunities. And actually, when it's people that... Some of them were people I knew and some of them were people I didn't know. But when it's people you know and you get to that point where they want you to do something, you kind of feel like you can't let them down. Yeah. So you do something. They were generally fixed term contracts, you know, 6 months, year, 3 months.
Right.
So at least you know there's an end in sight to each of them. They're not a commitment for years. They're a commitment for months. The NED thing's slightly different because NED roles tend to be minimum 2 years, maybe a bit more than that. But certainly from a consulting point of view, I could make them fit. And I think I just was enthusiastic. It was going well. I was still enthusiastic as I was as an employee. And suddenly find you've committed yourself to... I was never overcommitted, but I was committed, fully committed to a number of things that kind of then impact on your time. The good thing is most of that work's being done from home, so at least that's a bit of a compromise compared to having to go to an office.
You're not commuting as much.
I'm not commuting and I'm not traveling.
Full-time director.
Yeah. So it's an interesting transition.
And did you receive any formal training, any formal... insights into actually be a non-executive director versus a director, because of course you're action oriented. So the risk is you end up directing and doing.
Exactly right. And I think we'll talk about that more, I'm sure, because that is a difficult tightrope to walk with a non-executive.
It is.
But I think did I take any formal guidance? No, I read a lot. I read a lot generally anyway, mostly non-fiction, mostly stuff that's going to improve my knowledge of something, the world around us or whatever. But no, so no formal training. I did sign up, and we can talk about this if you like. It'd be an interesting element of the conversation. I signed up to an ILM7 executive coaching program. I haven't completed it yet.
When did you sign up to that program?
Why?
No, when?
When? Ooh, 2 years ago.
And talk me through the time horizon since.
Time horizon since is I went through all the seminars, which were online, saw the other people that were on the executive coaching courses, and I kind of drew a conclusion probably before the final seminar that this wasn't really what I thought it was going to be. And I, funnily enough, I saw a post on LinkedIn. I can't remember who wrote it. Somebody from the Northeast wrote a post on LinkedIn about, I hate executive coaches. And it then had a whole piece of information about why he hated executive coaches. And I read it and I thought, I can see exactly where that's coming from. I don't actually hate anybody, for what it's worth.
That's right, strong word.
But I can see why some people get incredibly frustrated with the whole world of executive coaching. I think it's an overused term. I think there's far too much of that kind of thing being offered out, and quite often by people who I would have no confidence that they had any ability to be my executive coach. I'd kind of like to think that somebody who's going to be an exec coach has been an exec and understands what that's about. Although I totally understand the difference between being a coach and being a mentor and all of that stuff. I kind of decided halfway through that I'd signed up for the wrong course. It wasn't the kind of thing. I would be much more interested in telling people how to do things than trying to make them understand how they could better do things for themselves. I think that's the fundamental difference. And just kind of thought, this isn't for me. And I guess I did see a lot of people that I thought, really? And it's...
i.e. they didn't have the experience or perhaps the credibility.
I think the credibility.
In a position of a non-exec director.
As a coach, I think, or formerly as a coach. And you know, maybe I'm being overcritical, but you can only observe what you observe. And so rightly or wrongly, I kind of didn't complete that. And I decided that this whole area of executive coaching, I'm quite happy to be a mentor to anybody that wants a mentor, somebody that is maybe a new MD who wants a bit of guidance on how you become an MD when you've been a functional director or actually, the business I'm in, one of the businesses I'm in, Mediaborn, it's a Northeast video production company. I joined them as a non-executive director. The initial conversation for that was that Chris Thompson, the MD, needed a kind of advisor, a mentor, because he's a video production man.
That's right.
He doesn't know how to run a company. And suddenly he's growing a business and he's got employees and he's got all of this other stuff that he's never done before that he needs a bit of guidance on. And as we conversed and got to know each other better. We get on really, really well. It became obvious that actually what Chris needed was somebody non-executive who could advise on strategy and have oversight of what's going on in the market and what's going on outside of the business and make sure it stays on the straight and narrow, you know, as it grows from a CSR perspective and diversity and equity, inclusion, all that, all this stuff that everybody's got to be very aware of now, just to make sure that he had all of these things on the radar. And we were steering a course that was right. And also an independent mind who could say, look, this is right, this is wrong, here's what's happening, here's what you could do here. I think that it became very clear that that was what he needed. He needed non-exec guidance as he builds a board, which he will do, and as he builds a business. And the first step of that was securing funding, which I think you may have even spoken to Chris about.
That's right.
We're probably too small for Ryecroft Lenton at this stage of our development. Maybe next round of funding.
Indeed.
We'll be
small acorns.
Or one day when we decide to exit, maybe that'll be the time we speak to you. But I think because, you guys are great at that. But I think for this stage, it was a relatively small amount and we're very, very close to closing that out, actually.
It's exciting.
Now, it's a really exciting time for the business. I've kind of led that for Chris and we've worked hand in hand on how we develop the strategy alongside that to make sure that the new investors will understand exactly what we're trying to do with the business. And it's really exciting.
Yeah, it is. It is. We're going to come back to the
excitement
in a moment because I can see it. But I'm going to ask one question before we move on to that. So obviously you said that Chris of Mediaborn, as an example only, identified he needed an independent perspective to help him better run his business. I think one challenge in me environment is there is often, I think, not a real clear appreciation as to the difference between a non-exec director and a coach / a advisor. Because actually, to the sort of owner manager, that role might be one in the same. So from your perspective, it would be fascinating for the benefit of our viewers, Andy, just to understand what you would say is the clear difference between a non-executive director versus a coach or a mentor who supports the owner.
Yeah, it's tricky in a very small business to draw the line. But I think the difference for me is that a coach or a mentor to the owner, you're very much working one-to-one with the interests of the individual. in how they perform as a business leader and how they get the best results for their company. As a non-exec, your role is all about the delivery for the entire shareholding body, whoever they are. So it can't be focused just on an individual. It's got to be with the business interests.
So you are responsible to different stakeholders.
Absolutely right. So all stakeholders in the business, I have a responsibility to. Now, at the minute, they're relatively few, but they're about to be more because we're about to raise some more money. So, and you know, so we'll have new stakeholders that whose interests I have to protect. It's one of my roles. I think I mentioned the words earlier. You know, so it's that oversight of the company. It's developing the strategy and strategy direction and independence and retaining independence. Whereas if I was a pure coach mentor to Chris, maybe don't need to be as independent. I can be more involved in the day-to-day. And don't get me wrong, Chris wants to drag me into the day-to-day. You know, there are things where he knows that I can add some value. I've got to be really careful. That's not what I'm doing. Now, you know what? If we have another conversation in 6 months' time about there's a role here that needs to be fulfilled and actually I can fulfill it, I'm absolutely up for that conversation. But as I say right now, NED is what I want to do, and NED is where I think the value is being added to that business.
Yes. And how will you, Andy, instill a degree of discipline when it comes to how involved you will allow yourself to become in the businesses that you are non-exec direct from the board of? Because clearly there is a likelihood that the businesses you are supporting will see value in the advice you get.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, before you know it, you could become a permanent executive.
I could.
And part of the furniture. So how are you going to self-discipline you?
Well, I have learned over the last 3 years, I've trained myself really hard. It's not hard to be blunt because I'm a Geordie, and you know, we are quite honest and quite
natural.
And we're quite blunt, and that's fine. You know, it's never rude, but it's blunt. But I think it's partly that. I've got to do that with myself, you know, remind myself, this is why I'm doing it, this is how it works. But I'm fairly blunt with Chris. You know, if I think something is not the thing I should be doing, then I'll just say, I can give you a bit of guidance on how you should go do this, but I'm not the one doing it because that's not my role.
Yes, understand.
And obviously we're looking to bring people in at the minute. So the next stage will be recruiting some more permanent people to the business. There's only 5 in the business at the minute. So recruiting more people to that, we'll start to bring those disciplines even more to bear.
Yes.
In terms of what I do and what I don't do.
And obviously, as you've transitioned, Andy, into being a plural non-exec director / board advisor, you will have found your feet with not only how much time it takes to support one business.
Yep.
Because it's not just the board meeting.
No.
There's so much more that you will be providing to each of the businesses you support. But also, you know, in pursuit of this work-life balance that you're happy with. So how many non-exec director / board advisor seats do you think is optimum to mean you're giving each business the attention time they deserve?
Yeah.
But without you finding yourself full-time, which, of course, was not why you've pursued this opportunity.
Even if you find yourself full-time, it's a different way of working. But I think and I'm probably the wrong person to ask because I'm relatively early in my non-executive
career. What's your perspective?
Career building. My perspective is that probably no more than three or four, but it might even be fewer than that. You know, it could be two for me. It just depends with each one how much work there is that I get involved in, how involved I get, and how much I need to be involved to do the role of the non-executive director in that business. So it could be two, but I think probably the max would be four.
And one thing that certain NEDs, chairman, choose to do is to take equity in businesses that they are non-executive directors on the board of.
Yep.
Is that something, Andy, that you choose to do?
Yeah, so I have equity in Mediabourne, and I'll consider taking a bigger equity stake at some time in the future. I think there was an early play stage for me, and then there's a follow-on stage where once we see how things are developing, make sure we like each other and get on and work well together and all that good stuff. You know, you don't want to throw too much in until you understand all of that stuff. But I'm an equity holder now and have a view that I may become a bigger equity stakeholder in the future.
And just a question, because this is something that I've asked two or three non-executive directors in the past. I'd appreciate your perspective, acknowledging that there's not a right or a wrong answer, Andy. But certain people believe that to be truly independent, having equity doesn't work, because actually you are not independent if you are benefiting from the advice you give directly.
And I can see
what's your view on that.
I think it's a fair challenge. I think it's an absolutely fair challenge, but I think it does depend on how you choose to manage your remuneration from any particular role. You know, some NEDs, the business has enough money to pay a sensible rate for an NED. Chris is at a very early stage, so our agreement is that I work for very little, but there was a bit of equity involved. And I think I try to just ignore it insofar as I can. You know, at the moment, the value of that equity is relatively low. Yes, I've got a vested interest in making it larger, making it more valuable. But I think I try to just ignore it. But it is a fair challenge. It really is, Carl. And I'm sure there are people out there who would choose not to go down that route, and that's fine. Yes. And it might well be that another NED that I consider is a paid NED with no equity involvement. And I think each one's got to be judged on its merits, but you've got to try to keep it insofar as you can at arm's length and just think, you know what, that's there. It's a bit of a sleeper.
Yes, right.
Like what you say, just ignore it, leave it, and one day if it's worth looking.
Well, that's right. And of course, the other train of thought is that actually perhaps having equity means you are more goal aligned, because you are there to improve the equity value of the business.
Absolutely.
So actually, you know, you can argue that same point both ways, can't you?
Yeah, and I think when you talk to external investors, they see that as an appropriate. It won't be to have equity. Absolutely right.
So as you say, I think each instance needs to be considered in its own right. But it's always fascinating to get perspective on that, because there are quite extreme views on that same subject within the NED community.
Yeah, and I think it does depend on where you're at in terms of your own financial security, and also what you see as the end game from the roles that you play. Each one could be different.
Yes, right. Obviously, earlier you mentioned that when you were a full-time director, you know, you were not only very interested in the sales and marketing function within each of the businesses, Andy, that you worked within, but you did certainly give me the impression that you were very focused on action.
Yes.
Just talk me through how you inspire action in a CEO within a business you're working with, if in fact that CEO's pushing back, so doesn't agree with you, doesn't fully appreciate the direction of travel that you're encouraging. How do you deal with that as a NED?
I think in any situation, in any position, you have to have justification for your position. If you're going to create an argument, and it's a really good time to be talking about this, because I see an awful lot of debate out in the ether, and you know, on various social platforms, where people put out viewpoints, but there seems to be very little in terms of justification for that perspective. My view is always that if I'm going to take a position on anything, I'm going to have something that backs up my position. I'm going to have done some work on that. Now, that doesn't mean everybody will always see or agree with
it. But it's an educated, considered,
but it means that you've considered it. You try to apply a bit of data rationality to it. You try to bring in some external resources that might help justify that. I think the other thing is that I'm a leader from the front. I've never been in any position. I like to be visible. So I think as an MD of a business, you know, one of the things I did when I first joined, just not saying anything to be worthy or anything, but one of the first things I did when I joined that business was I agreed a plan where every week I would take five or six people from the business, anywhere in the business, from the shop floor, from the warehouse, anywhere, out for a bar meal after work on a Monday. It would be a Monday night, 5 o'clock, straight after work. And I would take five or six, which at that time we had about 100 odd employees. And I reckoned at that rate, I could get everybody out for a meal over the first couple of years. And it means that you're visible. It means you're hearing what's happening on the shop floor. It means that they think you're interested in, well, because I am interested in everything that goes on in the business, so that I can find out where those tension points are, those pressure points, where we might be able to save money, where we might be able to make money. I think I use it only as an example of trying to lead from the front, trying to be visible. I wouldn't expect anyone to do anything that I wouldn't do or be prepared to do myself. But that doesn't mean seeking glory. It means taking glory from the achievements of the people that work for you and trying to help them to do the job that you've employed them to do, because you know they're capable of doing it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's fascinating to hear that you did that every Monday.
Yeah.
What was the, and I appreciate there will have been many, but what was the one thing that you think you were able to take away from those early evening bar meals which had a tangible, demonstrable impact on the business that you wouldn't have been aware of without having those?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting question. Do you know what it was? I think the thing that made the biggest difference was actually an appreciation for me of how other people's lives are and the pressures and the balances that people, you don't even think about it. You know, somebody in the warehouse has done something wrong and you don't know what's going on in their life. And it's amazing when you do something like that, when you actually open yourself up to that kind of casual conversation, it's amazing the things people tell you about their lives and about what goes on. And
how did that help the business?
Well, because I think it then allows you to look at where pressure points might be in the business and how you deploy people and have you got the right resources in the right place, or actually is this area overstaffed? Is that what that's telling me? And this area's understaffed, and that's what that's telling me. So it allowed me to allocate resource in a much more appropriate manner than maybe I had to. Now, bear in mind, I started this when I was really new into the business, the first week in. So the things you learn first week aren't going to be much help because you don't know what's gone on before.
No.
But as the months go by, you realize that you're building a picture
yes.
of different departments, how each department works, how they interact, where the tensions are, where the personal tensions are, which I think can sometimes hold a business back that you need to break through. Maybe something as simple as moving someone from one job to another that releases a tension can be a really, really big thing for a company when you're trying to get product out the door every week. Mm. And it's those little things for me that make a massive difference to the bottom line. You know, waste management was a big thing in one of the factories, and you suddenly saw why you were getting waste, because there just wasn't the coordination between
right.
two departments that I thought there should have been. And so you see these things. You know, it's similar when you know, these men, people that go on the shop floor on the TV, I did that as well. You know, when we were busy, I'd just go to the factory and work on the line and encourage others to do that as well. Because actually, you learn such a lot about how people's day-to-day lives are and how mistakes can happen, how, you know, that routine can just become so mundane that something bad happens because it's gonna happen sometimes. It's they're really interesting techniques. I'm not saying waste all of your time on this. I'm
no.
saying, you know, but cherry pick and do these things and it gives real insight into how a business operates.
And it is fascinating because when you are a very busy executive,
yeah.
there is a risk, isn't there, that you are too busy.
Yeah.
And there is a belief often that you are genuinely too busy doing yeah. things that are important and urgent.
Yeah.
So how did you instill the discipline to afford yourself the headspace to actually engage
yeah.
the workers at a level that ordinarily you wouldn't have? Given, of course, as the MD, you'll have yeah. 101 other jobs on your to-do
yeah,
list.
I mean, I think the one, it's another good question. I think the one, you remember everybody used to read Stephen Covey?
Oh, yes.
Seven Habits of Highly Effective right. People. The one that I vividly, or I really took notice of and actually tried to live with every day of my life since reading that, was the how you prioritize, you know, urgent and important and the little quadrants. And if it's urgent and important, you deal with it first. And if it's urgent but not important, you deal with it third. And if it's important but not urgent, you deal with it second. And if it's not urgent or important, why are you even looking at
it?
Leave it at the bottom. And I try to order, quite often just in my head, but I try to order the things I've got to do in that way so that actually you're still focused on the important stuff. But it's amazing at freeing up some time to do some of the things that maybe others wouldn't think are that important, but I think are really, really important. I mean, there's a lot of these kind of almost religious disciplines that every individual employs. You know, people always laugh because I say, you know, I never leave a day with an unread email. I literally don't. I never have. And you know, in some companies, my last full-time role, I would get 200 a day. It's quite difficult to finish a day with all of them having been looked at. And I'll either have read them, decided I don't need to do anything, or I'll file them, or I'll done some action, or I'll send a holding email to say, look, I've read it, but I'm not ready to respond yet. But I will not leave a day with an unread email, and I still follow that now. And actually, when you become plural, it gets even more difficult, because now I'm watching three or four inboxes trying to make sure I'm on top of it. But it's a really good discipline, and actually some think that means I must waste a lot of time reading emails. I genuinely don't think I do, because I never have that period when I have to sit and look at 200 emails ever, because I'm constantly dealing with them. And it's about how speedily you work. It's
yes.
about how much you get out of every hour. And I've always think I've been quite good at doing a lot in a short space of time, but trying to be accurate with it. And I think all of these little disciplines actually free up time. They don't kill time, they free up time. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes total sense. And these are things that, as you say, over years you've finessed, and these are now self-taught, self-imposed disciplines, which allow you to run an effective day-to-day, right?
Yeah.
And of course, everyone will have a different rhythm.
Yes, absolutely right. Okay. Yeah.
But that makes sense. Thanks, Andy.
And I'm, you know, by no means hold this up and say this is how everyone should work. It's what suits me.
Sure.
It's a bit like when you review, you know, financial numbers, data. An accountant will crawl through every number and look for the errors, look for the, you know, someone like me who's not a accountant, I've done trading on finance for non-financial managers and all that good stuff. But for me, it's about spotting the key things that I need to see in the numbers and knowing where to go to look for them and having to trawl through everything. It's a similar thing, you know, rather than being one who trawls through all of it. Now I'm going to look for the things that matter to me and that I can affect.
Yes.
And I'll do something with those.
I was sort of pondering a moment ago, you might have seen me sort of reflect.
Yeah,
because I was just thinking about something you said about sort of the need to clear down emails every day. And this is something that you believe is important.
Yeah.
And it's something you've chose to discipline yourself to have to do. Mm. I mean, fascinatingly, I think we live in a world now whereby everything's immediate. Mm. Everyone expects immediate responses, which actually I think can be quite damaging.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean, for me, sometimes less speed, more haste is essential.
Yeah.
So sometimes, like you, I will want to have read every email.
Yeah.
But actually, from a tactics or optics perspective, sometimes actually an immediate response isn't the right answer.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do think nowadays, sadly, people are starting to believe fast is best.
Yeah.
And of course, I think that's not always the case, right?
I think I'd go a stage further than that. Actually, there's a quote I really love, and you can ask me who it was, and I can't remember who it was who said it, but there's a really nice quote about what separates humans from other mammals, and it's man has learned to place I think between I feel and I do. Where most mammals will have fight or flight reaction. Yeah. They either go or they fight.
Yep.
What we've learned to do is to think in between. It might be a really short piece of thinking, but we think, and I think one of the things, I think what you've just mentioned, and one of the things that I absolutely buy into, is that the advent of social media, the way that social media works, we're reducing down the amount of thinking we do in between feeling and doing. And I've fallen foul of it myself. You put a response out on LinkedIn, or you put and you think, that wasn't what I meant. You know, I wasn't meant to say so. And I think we are eroding the thinking time that evolution has developed in our brains to allow us to give a right response. So when I say I'll have read them all. I won't necessarily have responded.
Yeah, you might.
And like I said, if something needs a bit more thought, it'll get an email saying, I've looked at it. I haven't thought about it yet. I'll get back to you when I've thought about it. So at least someone knows I'm interested, but I've not necessarily given it the amount of thought that I need to yet.
Yes.
That doesn't mean I don't sometimes send things too quickly. I'm sure I do, and I'm sure everybody does.
Exactly. I'm sure we're all guilty of having done that, but I think it's really important to be mindful of the need to consider an action before you act.
And consider the impact of that action.
That point.
Yeah.
So just to reflect for a moment. Mm. So obviously you now, Andy, have a plural existence. You're NED and or chairman and or advisor to a variety of businesses. Tell me, at what point do you think in each instance you will be able to conclude that you've achieved with a business success?
Yeah. Madly difficult question to answer. I think each business will be totally different. I think with Mediaborn, success will come when we get to a size where we can conclude an exit. And an exit might not necessarily mean the people involved all leave.
No, but a value within it.
Yes, exactly. Right. At which point I'll have a decision to make whether I want to leave that and move on and do something else or stick with it again. I think each one is going to be a totally independent and different decision. And I don't even know how do you know when the time is right? Well, you get to the point, you see, you weigh it all up, you look at what the value is in it for you, and can you still actually see value that you can bring to the business that could make that even greater for everybody, all the stakeholders, which we've said has to be the objective, is to improve value and do things for every stakeholder. If I still feel I can add value that will do that, then why wouldn't you continue, I guess? But then there may come a logical point where you say, you know what, I think my work here is done, so to speak. It's for someone else to take that on.
You mentioned that one of the key reasons you decided to step away from being a full-time director to pursue being an NED was you wanted a better, more sustainable work-life balance because you had other dreams and hobbies to pursue. So you talked about travel, spending more time with your four kids.
Yeah.
Have you been able to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one thing I would say, traveling not so much because the COVID thing kind of put pay to that to an extent. But we will do that. I've got a daughter who's working in Bangkok now, so I've got to go see her pretty soon. One at university in Birmingham, that's not so far. I see him quite often. And my youngest daughter is becoming fairly serious in her equestrian endeavours. So she's in the vendor.
Wow, okay.
As I said, we've got horses at home. That's a pretty all-encompassing hobby for everyone, you know, so there's always a fence to fix. Horse, you know, the horses need constant look after. She needs to be taken to the, she's only 18, so she's not driving yet. She will be soon, hopefully, but even when she can't drive a lorry.
That's right.
So my wife has to drive the lorry. I can't drive the lorry because I'm diabetic, so I can't get a lorry license.
Wow.
But I go along, you know, so and we want to support her as much as possible. You know, she's taken a year out. She's just done her A-levels. So she's taken a year out to focus on riding for a year and see what can happen.
So is she getting her results soon?
She's getting her results on Thursday.
Are we feeling confident?
Well, she's very diligent
and
really hardworking. And not all of my kids are that. They won't mind me saying. But Eve is very, very diligent, very hardworking. So I'm kind of expecting that she'll get what she needs to get. And if she does, she wants to come to Newcastle. Who needs her?
Obviously, you speak so proudly of your four children.
Yeah.
And clearly, you have a lot of demands on your time in and out of business. When all is said and done, why? What is this really all about for Andy?
I think what it's all about is happiness. Is that a really glib thing to say? Happiness, and I think I've... I don't want this to sound arrogant because it's not intended arrogant. I try really hard not to be arrogant in any way. But I take much more joy from watching others' happiness than I do maybe from my own.
And why would you think that would be perceived as arrogant?
I think that's just a natural thing. Because it's an easy thing to say.
Yes.
But you would have to watch my everyday life to know that it's the truth.
One has to practice what one preaches.
Absolutely right. Sure. And you know, and I think... you know, I am proud of my kids. And, you know, one runs a hotel, one is a teacher in Bangkok, one is at uni studying graphic communication, and Eve is probably going to study English at Newcastle with any luck. She doesn't know what she wants to do. With any luck, she'll be a three-day vendor. Who knows? But you know, I am proud of them. I take my happiness from that. My wife and I have a great relationship. We spend most of our time outside of work together. Actually, I wrote a piece on that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I read it.
Did you read it?
I didn't.
And it was funny because it got a very negative response from a couple of people. And I think this just shows you how careful you need to be on social media. I didn't think I said anything. All I said was, you know, I think Simon should go with you and give it a go. What's the harm in that? It's camping. It's not bungee jumping. You know. But it was quite interesting, the reaction. You know, you shouldn't be telling people to do things they don't feel comfortable doing. I wasn't telling him to do anything. You know, but it's, and I think, how did we get out of that? It's, I take great joy in watching other people succeed, be happy. I think that's also a good trait for a leader, that you take joy in your team delivering.
Without doubt.
And your delivery comes from watching them deliver.
Oh.
That's kind of how I see the world. And I try to be kind. I think kindness is a much underrated value to many people. But I genuinely do try to be kind and try to be nice and don't always get it right. Sometimes you overstep and make a wrong step. And I made one of those last week as well. I'm not even going to talk about that one. But
if I asked some of your colleagues that you used to work with when you were a full-time director, what is the one... word you would use to describe Andy? What word would they use?
I think they would say positive and enthusiastic. Well, they'd be two words, I know, but I think positive and enthusiastic about what I'm doing.
Yes.
And I think interested is a good word.
Yes.
Although, you know, as a functional director, that's another difference between non-exec, where you're looking at the overall business, and as a director on a board, you're generally a functional director in charge of a function of the business. have a great interest in the other functions and understanding what I do that might put pressure on them, or what they do that might put pressure on me. And I think it's important to understand those points. I think people would say positive, enthusiastic, interested.
Which are really great traits and ways in which you would always want to be perceived, right?
Sure.
Obviously, I can't help but observe that when you talk about your kids, you are far more animated than you have been throughout the entire podcast. So let me ask a question.
Yeah.
Obviously, as a man who's had a very successful, demanding, varied career, you know, there are times where you have to make sacrifices.
Yeah.
Just reflecting, do you feel you have spent all of the time that you would want to have spent with your four children, or have you had to spend less time with them in pursuit of the independence that you
have? I think despite everything I've said, that I've considering the circumstances, I've got the balance relatively
great,
right?
Hey, which is always.
I don't think any of them would complain that I wasn't there for them ever, or, you know, which you see all the time on TV dramas, and, you know, oh, dad's never there. It's police dramas, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, you're a policeman, you're never here, you're always out.
That's right.
And if you're not, you're drunk.
But it is the one thing, isn't it, as a parent, that pulls your heartstrings.
No, it is. It is.
As your little one says, I want to spend more time with daddy, for me, it just gets me quick.
It does. And I've never had that. I've never had that. And I think that's good. So I don't think I've got that balance wrong ever. But I think it's very difficult in these days to get that balance right, unless you're very lucky. Yeah. I think very few people are able to. I mean, it doesn't mean people don't try, it doesn't mean people don't do it. But I think the pressures on life, especially at the minute with cost of living crisis the way it is, I think it must be very hard. It is very hard for lots of families to keep all of those balls in the air and to make sure they've got the right balance between one and the other. But I think I've mostly, touch wood, mostly got it right.
Good.
Despite everything I've said about driving all over the country. And, you know, would I have rather not done that? Yeah, of course. I'd rather have been at home every day. I really would. But there has to be some compromise if you want to satisfy the other aspects of your life, I guess. And also, you don't get to that point without making...
I think the one thing that I think now isn't considered PC, which should be discussed more often, is the fact that actually no one achieved anything worth achieving without hard work, sacrifice, determination, and a need to acknowledge that actually you can't have everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because people talk about work-life balance in a very sterile, vacuous environment. I don't think it's that black or white. And the reality is anything worth having will be tough to get, right?
Yeah. And I don't think anyone has everything. Almost no one. You know, if you look at the richest people in the world, they clearly haven't got everything because they would stop. They wouldn't.
Yes.
They're questing for something else all the time.
That's right.
It's really interesting. And I think you know, society's changed dramatically over the last 50 years, and it's going to change dramatically again over the next 50 years. And it brings with it more freedoms to some extent. It also brings with it pressures that we didn't know were there to some extent.
That's right.
I'm quite glad I'm not young again, pardon that expression, but I'm quite glad I'm where I am now rather than having to do all that again, because there's a lot of hard work involved in getting to where you want to be.
Without doubt. And I think, you know, the world in which we live in now, whereby everything's immediate, everything's accessible, everything's online, people are impatient.
Yeah.
The problem is people think that success is something you can achieve overnight.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I am most keen to dispel.
Yes.
Because, you know, people who achieve often can be considered lucky.
Yes.
Fortunate.
Yeah.
But the reality is you create your own luck.
You do.
Fortune.
You do. And I think, you know, you could probably find a handful of people who've had what you would call overnight success, but they're very rare.
But it's incredibly
very, very rare.
Right.
Generally, it's a lot of hard work and a lot of stuff that you don't even know they've had to do to get to where they need to be. And yes, a bit of luck will help. And most people along the way get some luck in one form or another. But if you're relying on luck alone, you know, you're not going to get anywhere, which is why, you know, we all do the lottery, but
that's right.
Very few of us win it.
That's right. You said that the thing that is most important to you now, and the thing that drives you now is happiness.
Yeah.
So when are you, Andy, at your happiest?
I think when I'm seeing the business I'm involved with achieve, when I'm seeing them make small steps towards a goal, and when I'm at home, it's just in everything I do. I mean, I really do think, when my daughter goes out and has a good show jumping round or a good cross-country round or a good dressage, or my son gets a good grade in one of his assignments at uni, or my daughter in Bangkok, she's been traveling for a month in Vietnam last month and sent me pictures all the time. And I think, oh, it's fantastic. You know, imagine doing that. I want to go do that. And my other daughter who runs the hotel is just very, very happy in her life. And that's great. That's joy. I'm very lucky, I realize, Carl, to be able to say that all four of my kids, unless they're hiding something very dramatic from me, all four of my kids are in a really good place. And that makes me immensely happy on their behalf. So now there's absolutely no doubt, probably there's never been any doubt, that's what brings me the most joy. But I really enjoy, if Mediaborne, when we sign these documents for our new investment, that'll be a major step for the business. We've got a couple of pieces of dialogue going on with people. We're trying to move from being a business that makes video content for business, so media, advertising and corporate, into the content creation side, so the entertainment world. We're going to keep this bit because actually we make a sensible EBITDA. Our turnover's growing. We're very good at it. So why wouldn't we keep that going? But actually we want to make this step into the slightly more fickle entertainment space where you can have business one day and not have it the next. Mm. And it takes probably a year to break into it. So we've got to keep this thing going really well and keep pedaling while we try to get this developed. But we've got a couple of really interesting conversations going on in the entertainment space at the minute. One of which I have been actively involved in, but I can talk a little more on that if we've got time, because it involves my family history. So
right.
That's the only reason I've been involved in that. It's something I've been trying to do for a long time. But we're making some steps there, and it's great when you get that. You have a really positive meeting with somebody and it looks like that project's going to get off the ground. So
with one eye on time, because we could definitely talk for longer. Okay. Andy, will have to drag you back onto a future podcast. But for now, my final question, just to sort of round off our discussion today, is to just really understand a little bit about the advice you would give to a individual who's currently an MD or CEO or a permanent employee within a business who's really keen to support more businesses, who has knowledge and experience that they want to deploy in a meaningful way, but doesn't really know how to go from being a full-time director to become a plural non-exec director or board advisor. What would your advice be to that person, in case we have viewers who are thinking about doing what you've now done?
Yeah, I mean, I think the key thing is to really think about why you want to do that, why you want to move from that, and to consider that your accountabilities will change quite dramatically, if you're an MD to a non-executive director. And I think also find yourself somebody who can give you advice on, because I would have, in hindsight, I would have really valued having somebody alongside me who knew how to break me into. And I did contact some of those, not you guys, but I did contact some of those organizations that specialize in non-exec recruitment. But almost to a man, their response was, oh, well, usually you'll have to get the first one yourself.
Mm.
Once you've got one, we can then help.
It was really uninspiring advice.
Right? Not very clever, is it?
Really? No.
And I won't name names, but some of the big guys, that's the response you get is, get your first one. And once you've got it, then we can help you get others. Well, yeah, it's a bit chicken and egg.
That's right. That's right.
Where do we start? So I think finding someone who can give you access or can maybe help you get that first role, because I think it is true that once you've got the first one, it becomes easier because people can see that you're doing it and you're delivering. But I think get somebody good alongside you who you trust their judgment, and really think about how you want your accountability to be, and are you at that position where you can afford to risk not having any work for a period of time, because it will take time. I've had periods of the first year that I went freelance was really, really good. Then it went quiet for a while. Luckily, it was okay. Then it got busy again, and now it's a kind of happy medium at the minute, which I'm very, very pleased with. So, it's good. So that's probably it. Did that answer you again?
It does. No, thanks, Andy.
Yeah, I think that's all right.
The point you've made is, if you are a full-time director in a business and you're looking to become an advisor to the business, be it a formal non-exec or chairperson, or even perhaps just a consultant, I think your advice is speak to those who've done that, and perhaps they'll have an ability to help, whether it be to appreciate the difference legally from a governance perspective between a non-exec director and a board advisor, all the way through to perhaps appreciating how to originate opportunities. Because again, I think the one thing that perhaps, Andy, people may not have fully thought through is how difficult it is to be entrusted as a non-exec director. Given you may be unknown and you may not have necessarily credentials or experience of advising a business of that size in that sector.
Absolutely. And I think, you'll find on platforms like LinkedIn, there are an awful lot of organizations offering to get you into the NED space, and you pay them as a candidate. Kind of don't think you should ever pay as a candidate.
No.
The client should be footing the bill for recruitment of NED.
I agree.
And I just think you've got to avoid that. Avoid the temptation. It's very tempting to say, well, let's have a go at that. Let's see what they've got. And actually, you shouldn't be paying as a candidate. You shouldn't.
Agreed.
So I think there's some pitfalls. But I think that probably covers it.
Andy, thank you. It's been a thoroughly enjoyable, varied conversation.
Yeah.
Really appreciate you joining this Confessions of a CEO/NED podcast.
Yeah.
Obviously, many of our viewers will either be business owners looking to appoint a non-exec director, or it could be an MD looking to become plural. So for sure, I'm sure you wouldn't mind me saying that any of our viewers who would like to reach out can direct.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You'll find me on LinkedIn. I'm very easy to find.
And we'll make sure we include your contact details in the actual comment box below the podcast. But for now, Andy, thank you for joining me.
Carl, I appreciate it. Thanks for your time. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks, Andy. It's been an absolute pleasure having Andy Leslie on my Confessions of a CEO/NED podcast today. It's been brilliant to understand why Andy decided to step down as managing director to become a plural non-executive director. It's also been really interesting to hear more about some of the things that Andy was mindful of when forcing his own hand to become a non-exec director in pursuit of adding more value to more businesses while actually finding a better work-life balance so he can spend more time with his wife and 4 children. It's also been really interesting to understand a little bit more about some of the things that Andy has learned throughout his corporate career, which he's now, of course, looking to help the boards that he advises to benefit from. This podcast, along with all other Confessions of a CEO/NED podcasts, can be viewed not only on our website, but also our YouTube channel and all other social media feeds. I'm very grateful to Andy Leslie for giving up his time. And for sure, if any MD is looking to become a plural NED, or indeed you are a CEO looking to appoint your first non-executive director, I'm sure Andy Leslie will not mind us sharing with you his contact details, which we will include in the comments box under this podcast link. But for now, my name is Carl Swanspring. You've been watching Confessions of a CEO/non-executive director, powered by RG, and we look forward to seeing you soon on future podcasts.